Hello, and welcome back to another episode of the Grad School Whisperer, a podcast dedicated to taming the beast known as grad school. We are back for another episode, episode 3. And this is another episode where we will have a guest speaker. So, yes, I feel like I'm kind of setting the expectation really high right now because some weeks I will not have an amazing person on to talk to y'all. As mentioned, similar to last week's episode, we have another grad student who is coming on to share her experiences and kind of tools and strategies that she uses as a grad student and basically just her experience overall. So we have Emily Holbrook here with us, another student from the Applied Anthropology Department. I'm going to have her take it away. Emily, would you mind introducing yourself, telling us like a little bit about you, how you became a grad school student, just your journey overall, any research and anything else you want to share?
Oh, long introduction. Love it.
Okay. Yeah, whatever you want to share, the mic is yours.
Okay. Hi, everybody. I'm Emily Holbrook. I am a first-year PhD student at USF, like our lovely host here. Point of fact, she is my roommate, so...
That's true, so...
The fact that I wasn't the first guest is... That's fine. I mean, yeah, we'll have to deal with that when we get home, but it's fine. Yeah, so I did my master's at USF and rolled right into the PhD program. I am on the medical anthropology track, so a little bit cultural, a little bit biological. For me, it's a lot more like nutritional and food-based for the most part. Yeah, my research deals majorly with refugees, resettled refugees in particular. I'm really interested in acculturation and adaptation issues for refugees that have been resettled in the United States, particularly when it comes to like health and nutrition and access to healthy foods, and also like navigating a brand new, very complicated American food system. So I'm very interested in ways to make that transition easier so that refugees are not consistently in the bottom of the socioeconomic status hierarchy as we have it here in the States. So yeah, that's where most of my interest lies. But like I have a side hustle as like a research assistant, graduate assistant for an ER doctor at the hospital in Tampa. He's great. I do random things at the hospital. I've become like the resident IRB expert for my advisor and him at the hospital, and like help get medical studies with like an anthro-social twist through IRB. Trying to help make IRB and ethics review boards, which I guess we could talk about later and the complications of that, getting them to like understand social science research and just like the intricacies of social science research, because they don't get it they don't get it at all.
Very true.
And then I like hurdle is not the right word. I like what's
corral.
It called? Corral. Yeah. I like corral undergrads who are doing research at the hospital and help them a lot. I try and help put like a social spin on some things. TA for classes, those sorts of things. So yeah,
yes.
Like medical anthro on two different levels, yeah, and I might do my dual MPH. Haven't decided if I'm going to navigate through that storm.
Fun. So all the acronyms. So wait, hold on, just to make sure that I even understand all of them. So I know you mentioned IRB. That one I know because still get flashbacks to that experience.
That entire six months of my life. Arguing
so
with
IRB is fun. And if you end up going to grad school and becoming a researcher, your institution or university might have an IRB, which is the Internal Review Board, which pretty much how I think about it is a long, long time ago, i.e. not that long ago, research were ridiculously unethical and they just thought of an idea or whatever experiment they wanted to do, and they're like, you know what, I'm just gonna do it. Who cares about like if it's super unethical and like bad for people and their mental health or torturing with like shock devices and all of that fun stuff? I mean, you laugh, but it happened.
Yeah.
So pretty much the IRB ensures that we no longer can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So There will be no shocking devices. Maybe, I don't know. There could be a project out there doing that. Correct me if I'm wrong. You might be that person doing it. Yeah. Anything like ridiculously crazy or any other vulnerable population. And then you mentioned MPH. Can you explain that?
MPH, Masters in Public Health. Our school has a pretty unique program where you can get your PhD or MA in Anthro as long at the same time that you're getting a concurrent degree in Masters in Public Health. Or I think you can switch it and get like a doctorate in public health and a master's in anthro at the same time. I think it's like reversed that way. But yeah, we have a concurrent program. I mean, it's a pretty unique program. It draws a lot of people.
Okay, well, cool. So MPH, master's public health.
Yeah.
Cool. Awesome. So you mentioned you're currently a first year PhD student. Mm-hmm. And I know that you're out of state. So our first guest was from Michigan. And Emily is from Ohio, so I feel like I also need So we're recording this the same week that I did my interview with Brief. So for those of you that listened to that episode, you heard all about my new tattoo adventure. And so Emily was actually one of my friends that came with me on my tattoo adventure. And so she got an Ohio tattoo, so we have to represent Ohio just like we represented Michigan, just to make sure we're staying fair on this podcast. So, hey, do you have like a go blue? No, go green. She did correct me on that. So does Ohio have anything like that?
Well, I mean, we have like the O-H, and then you're supposed to respond I-O. You could like, say go Bucks.
Oh, go Bucks. Granted, there we go. I'm trying to stay fair.
I didn't
fair.
Go to Ohio State, though, but it's sort of like a, it's just like an Ohio thing. Mm-hmm. You just do it. Everyone just knows it.
Oh, that's cool. So wait, do it. And I got you.
O-H.
I-O.
There we go.
There
we
you go. It. So see, I am saying very unbiased on this, but you know.
So unbiased.
Go blue. So yeah, so you are an out-of-state student.
Yes.
So can you talk a little bit about, so did you do your master's degree here as well or back in Ohio or how did you end up in Florida?
Okay. Well, I did my master's degree in Florida at USF. Just continued straight on through. But I did my bachelor's in Ohio. I went to two separate undergrads. I went to Denison University, which is outside of Columbus, for 2 years. Got sort of tired slash couldn't keep up with the $50,000 a year tuition.
That's expensive.
Middle class self could not do that. Like, because even after like scholarships and like financial aid and stuff, it was still like thousands of dollars out of pocket. Mostly for like room and board and stuff. So yeah, that was expensive. So then I took a year off of school while I was transferring and just worked for a year. And then I went to the University of Akron, which is like 45 minutes, an hour from my hometown. That's a state school, a pretty big like commuter college just because it's like smack dab in the middle of Akron, Ohio. It's like right in downtown. So there's like definitely students live on campus, but most people live off campus around it, or like they drive in from all over the area, really. So I went there. Transferring was weird. They didn't take all of my credits because the classes didn't have the same titles or something. So 2.5 years to get through Akron. So really it took me 4.5 years. Well, I guess 5 if you count the break year to get through undergrad, but it was like 4.5 like.
Did you have to repeat classes?
I did. I had to repeat intro to anthropology because my Denison one was intro to anthropology and sociology, and that apparently just didn't count. I had to take an intro writing course at Akron because my intro writing course at Denison was called a freshman year seminar, and it was like a film class where we studied film. But we also had to, like, write papers. We were learning how to write. According to Akron, that, like, wasn't good enough or not a writing class. So I had to take, like, this, like, first semester freshman writing course as, like, a junior, basically. That was fun. So the two classes, like, sent me back because I couldn't finish it. So I ended up having to do an extra semester.
No, like, talk about determination and perseverance to get you, like, taking the same class over. Not because you, like, failed it or, like, just
didn't just understand it.
Oh, my God. I don't know what I would do in that situation. Yeah. I'd probably be like, I'm not doing this, so I'm dropping out.
Oh, yeah, please, and they made me take a humanities course because they wouldn't accept my AP European History class from high school, like, my test, because it was, like, first of all, that was like not a, I was like a independent study sort of course that we did in high school, so I got like a 3 I think on it, and they were like no, but or they
that's
stopped
passing. I'm
it's
just
passing.
Saying
it's that's passing like college for a credit. Class that like, we had once a week legit it was once a week yeah. Like before school started we were just like hey there's like 3 of us and we're just like hey we want to take the AP European history test, and we got like our AP US history professor to like yeah. And like teach us once a week, and we just read some books and then took the test, and it was interesting. But I got 3 and they wouldn't take it because like that year when I enrolled they were like oh we stopped accepting the European history exam for humanities courses, so I didn't take like an intro to humanities class, and so yeah, so I had like 3 classes basically I had to retake that like I mm-hmm. So that just like put me back a semester, and then yeah, then they didn't offer me scholarships because I wasn't going to be at Akron long enough for them to invest in me. Their words, not mine. Basically, I was coming as a junior, so I wasn't going to be there long enough to, like, get a scholarship. So, like, I ended up paying basically everything with student loans. Hey, debt. Wow. Bernie 2020.
So, with all of that that yeah. You went in...
Like, that was undergrad. We're not even talking undergrad. About grad
yeah,
school.
No, that's what I mean. So why did you decide to even stay and go to grad school after
so
all of that?
I actually, how many years did I take off? I was like an old master's student, I think, compared to our cohort. Honestly, like I was one of the older ones coming in for the master's program at this point. I was like a year behind from undergrad, and I took like 2 years. Off a year and a half, 2 years off after undergrad, and I just worked.
Okay.
And like hung out, like I just like did. I just worked.
In your field or just?
So like, I was like working in anthro. I was doing research, but I wasn't getting paid for it. So okay. I was also like a department manager at a grocery store.
Okay.
So I was doing that, and then I was doing like anthro research with my undergrad advisors with resettled refugees in Akron.
Yeah.
But there was no money in that, so I like had to live and pay rent and stuff. So. Yeah, so was working and doing that. I also worked full-time my entire last semester, or my last year. Oh, I was also working full-time my entire last year of my undergrad. So I was a full-time student and working full-time.
Okay.
Which was hard, but I mean, my like at that point, like my undergrad schedule was like pretty chill.
Okay.
So it wasn't that bad. It was like, it was a lot, but it was okay. Yeah, but I just took some time off. I just worked, did research. But I had always wanted to go to grad school. Like I had known from like the beginning, like middle school, like I wanted to get my PhD. I'd always wanted to get my PhD. I wanted to be the first in my family to get my PhD, and now I'm probably not because like, you know, my little brother now has like a heads up on me. So
oh, does he have his PhD?
He's working on it now, but he's a year ahead of me.
Oh, okay.
In his PhD. So I know. I mean, I don't know. Maybe it'll take him like forever to write his thesis, but I don't know. I just always wanted my PhD. I didn't really have, like, it's just, like, one thing. I just always wanted to do it.
Was there a specific reason behind it, or?
I've always liked anthropology. Like, okay. I knew I wanted to study anthropology in middle school. Originally, it was, like, physical anthro. Mm-hmm. Like, such a cliche, but I, like, really liked the TV show Bones. And then, like, I figured out it really wasn't, like, what anthropologists do, but I still, like, ended up figuring out, like, what a forensic anthropologist and physical anthropologist were, and I was, like, really fascinated by that. And then I started getting into some of, like, the research that they do on, like, religion. And I ended up in, like, medical with, like, resettled refugees. And so it's evolved since. But, like, I just started, like, getting into some of the stuff that they do. And I just always found it really interesting and fascinating. So, yeah, I was just like, I want to get my PhD.
I just need to get this done.
It was just one of the things. I just always wanted to do it. I don't know if I have a specific reason or it's just because it's like, I want a PhD.
No,
like, I'm gonna do it.
I get it. Like, one of my reasons, one of my pettier reasons, let me add in that like mm-hmm. caveat, is I just want certain people out there, I need you to know, like, put some respect on my name. That's Dr.
That
Hines
is Dr. Holbrook.
Yeah, exactly. So it's like, you better put that doctor
yes
in front
Emily
of it.
Holbrook, yeah. PhD.
Not medical, because that's an entirely different
not a real
thing.
Doctor.
But, you know, still that doctor, yeah. Like, comma, PhD. Yeah. No, I agree. Sometimes, even for, like, as simple as reasons, is I just want it, and that's okay, too.
And I genuinely enjoy school. Like, I always have enjoyed school. I actually like the classroom atmosphere. I mean, doing the work and the homework would be great. Like, it'd be fun to be able to, like, go to class and, like, discuss things that I've read and things like that and not have to, like, worry about writing stuff and just, like,
preach.
The stress bog down, whatever.
So
but
true.
I genuinely, like, I do enjoy school and I enjoy learning. But, yeah, I've just always wanted a PhD. I don't So that's sort of what I got to USF because of my undergrad advisor. She's great. Can I name drop? Are we allowed to do that?
Yeah.
Okay. So I got to USF because of my undergrad advisor, Dr. Carolyn Berman at University of Akron. Dr. Rodriguez Soto. They're like official like advisors, but like they really were.
Like mentors, I guess.
Yeah, mentors. But I was doing research with them with refugees. So like my last year and a half of undergrad, I got a research fellowship, undergrad one, to just do research with them. And that's when I got actually, like the first time I actually did research with resettled refugees. And it was in an ESL class, and it was looking at how these were Karen refugees from Burma. And we call it Burma because they don't recognize Myanmar, because that's the power that drove them out. So they're from Burma. We just started doing just like nutritional ant studies with them, pile sorts with like food and understanding how they sort of approach the American food system. Uh-huh. And I just sort of like fell in love with like working with resettled refugee groups. It's like such an interesting group of people and such a fascinating, resilient group of people to work with, that I just started really getting into the resettled refugee thing, and then got more and more in undergrad, more and more away from like physical, even though I still really enjoy it and studied a lot of it, into like the medical. And I like that combination of like the cultural and the bio. But anyway, roundabout. Dr. Berman knows my current advisor, Dr. Bear. They're friends. So when I was applying to programs, she told me about this one. And I like that this was like an applied one that had less let's create professors focus and like let's create these like practicing working anthropologists who are taking anthropology into the real world, and this, you know, thing to do things that are different and to affect change rather than just sort of study problems. So did that, and I applied to other programs. This one gave me funding as a master's student, and that was like, I already enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. I had never visited this campus before. I had never been to Florida before I moved. Like I was like, I was like poor in Ohio. Like,
oh, that was brave.
Working at a thing. So yeah,
because it's so different. It's Florida so and different. Ohio.
So I did virtual things. I just like talked on the phone with people, but it was like, okay, they gave me funding, tuition waiver, like a paycheck, found a roommate, like whatever, and I was like, all right, I'm just gonna do it. Like. I'm just gonna do it. Like, if I don't leave Ohio, I might not never do it. Like, mm-hmm. I've always wanted to go somewhere else. Florida wasn't my first choice, but
it's the best choice.
I don't know about that, but I still don't like the weather, but it's fine.
You mean bright sunshine and beautiful skies, humidity,
you mean
mosquitoes.
90% humidity.
90%. We have beaches, like
the beach that's like an hour and 15 minutes away driving.
Which is like my biggest struggle of being a student. Because I've lived in Florida for a pretty long time, and one of my biggest struggles is I'm used to just being 15 minutes away from the coast and then just having the beach there. I can go, I can chill, I can just relax. Yeah. Can't do that.
Not
like,
in Tampa.
It's a drive, plus the traffic and...
Not in Tampa.
Yeah, that's true. But Tampa has some pretty cool...
Tampa has cool things. Not saying that Tampa doesn't have cool things. No. But, like, at least in Ohio, you can swim in the lakes and you're not going to get eaten by, like, a crocodile
or there's gators
or something.
These lakes, I would not
and
trust that.
You can't get in lakes in Florida because dangerous things live in them.
Yep. Any body of water in Florida, I do not trust.
No, I wouldn't trust
that. Yeah, no. Next thing you know, I'm eaten by a gator.
Yeah, or I'm, like, getting, like... flushing bacteria or
true,
something.
Which was scary.
Cool.
But I did want to take a second to pause and go back to what you were talking about in terms of refugee studies.
Sure.
So first resource of the episode. So for anyone who is interesting and is still a current undergrad and you're trying to figure out who do I need to talk to, who's in the field, you mentioned two professors.
Sure.
Can you repeat their names, sir?
Oh, sure. So Dr. Carolyn Berman at the University of Akron. Honestly, a small state school, but a really interesting group of professors who really care about their students, including like the archaeology department. Her husband, Tim Matney, he's great. Dr. Tim Matney. He's cool.
Love it.
If you have an interest in art at all, he's actually really cool. And then Dr. Roberta Bear here at USF. Is my current advisor.
See, boom. I hope those name notepads are out. Name drops. look them up, see what they do. If you want to work in refugee or nutritional anthropology related, like,
yeah,
studies, look up these people, medical, contact them, see what they say you can do.
Real world things. Yeah. They're both into very into service learning, real world applications. They're not theoretical people.
So. Yeah. And I feel like reaching out to instructors and professors from the department is one of the ways you can actually figure out when you're trying to figure out what school am I going to? Do I want to go to this school? Send a quick email, be like, hi, I'm looking into this program. Yeah. Would you mind having a brief phone call with me or meeting up for coffee if you're in the area or anything along that lines? Because usually professors are really chill and they'll do that.
And honestly, grad school applications and getting into certain programs that you really enjoy can get really competitive. And with people, when people know you beforehand and they consider you're interested because you took the initiative to contact them before, like submitting an application or anything can do a lot, especially if you're trying to get funding.
That's
just
true.
Just saying. You never know what projects
don't get fed. Just saying. You have to make sure that you're out there. And the worst that can happen is that they say no, which
absolutely.
Usually they don't. So.
Yeah, absolutely.
But awesome. Well, thank you for walking us through that. So kind of, although, it works. No, it's a great experience though. So although like undergrad necessarily wasn't like the greatest or grad school was still something that you wanted to do. So you're like, you know what? I'm going to figure it out and I'm going to make it work. So again, that determination that grad students have, I don't know where we get it from, we have it.
Yeah. I told my parents.
Or you learn to have it.
Oh yeah. You learn to have it. Yeah. Sure. I just like told my parents, I was like, they knew I was applying for grad school. I had like basically narrowed it down between here and, UC Denver. And thinking it'd be funny, I told my parents, I was like, I'm moving to Florida. And they're like, you are? And I was like, yeah, I'm gonna go to Florida. You know, they gave me funding. I sold my furniture for the most part. Sold it to like my old roommates who took it to a new apartment for the most part. Just sold some things, put everything I had, like clothes wise and stuff, in like two suitcases, got on a plane and moved to Florida, and then like had furniture ordered on the internet to be delivered. Like, landed, got to the apartment complex with, like, my two suitcases and my carry-on and dropped them in there and went to Walmart and got an air mattress and slept on that for, like, air mattress and, like, pizza and, like, slept on the air mattress for, like, 3 days until my furniture finally showed up. Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then just, like, sort
of a quick transition, like, boom, 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 boom.
Yeah, I mean, I'd saved up money from undergrad and working. And but that, I mean, like, honestly, moving down here was, like, the majority of, like, my savings and stuff was just, like, taking the initiative to do that.
To come through.
And just like, yeah.
No, but I love it. So now that you have been in Florida and in grad school, can you tell us what your experience has been like? Like, share some stories.
Sure.
I want to hear some good stories, some bad stories, like everything in between.
Good, bad, everything.
Everything.
Honestly, overall, it's actually been a pretty good experience. I mean, there's ups and downs all the time, obviously. I wasn't expecting to take 3 years to do my master's. Happy that wasn't an uncommon experience in our program. So I didn't feel too bad about it after that, just because, like, you know, everyone's like, oh, 2 years, that's how long it takes to get a master's degree. And you're like, yeah, in some aspects and other things, not really. I guess I knew when I came down here, like, I wanted to do something with refugees. That was always the plan. I didn't know exactly what. I just knew that working with resettled refugees and was just something I was really interested in. I had experience with ESL, and my advisor had sort of a small project kind of like in the works, basically, with the ESL program here in Tampa for resettled refugees and asylees. And it was like somewhat up in the air, sort of, and she's just like, oh, if there's something, you know, you want to do, we have these avenues. And it was never really anything super concrete until after my first year, the summer after my first year, another Dr. Barron, another professor in our program, decided to do this nutritional assessment, this health assessment of a group of resettled refugees in the area. These are refugees mostly from like the Democratic Republic of Congo. And they're new. Like, this was a fairly new group to the U.S., and they were a lot. And this is a group I had heard about coming, like, was going to be showing up in the U.S. when I was still living in Akron. And it was something we had heard about for, like, 2 years, and they just kept saying, oh, these refugees from the DRC, they're coming. They're going to be here. they're going to have different health problems than you're used to with other refugees, or they're going to have like mental health problems because of their experience with the war in the Congo that's been going on for 2 decades. Just different things. We've just been getting these warnings about the fact that like, oh, we need to make sure services are prepared for this new group of people that's going to show up. But they just like never showed up when I was in Ohio. And then I got to Florida and then they showed up, I guess. I mean, there's just a decent group of them here in Florida. So we were... So Dr. Dylan Mahoney, he speaks Swahili. And he was just part of the thing. So we were like, all right, they wanted... Like, the refugee services themselves, like, wanted us to go and do this, like, nutritional assessment. Because Dr. Bear had done one previously with refugees mm-hmm. from Burma. And we just did this health and nutrition assessment. We spent a whole summer doing it. It was really interesting. That was my first much more nutritional assessment. Like, we did, you know, heights, weights, like, a lot of standard, mm-hmm. like, anthropometrics, talking to them about food, focus groups. And a lot of different issues just started coming out from that mm-hmm. we saw from the community, like school bullying issues with the kids. And then a big one was accessing food. Like, and something we saw too, like not having food in cabinets and yeah. like seeing food insecurity or hearing about food insecurity. And then a really big one was like talking to the women and them talking about how like they just didn't understand how the food benefit system works. And like, if you don't know, refugees who reside in the U.S. have access to social services like food assistance benefits for up to 5 years after mm-hmm. resettlement. It starts to dwindle as like the longer you're there, and obviously it's also income based. So if they do start making more money, they will start losing benefits the same way an American citizen would. But after 5 years, if they have not yet received or they don't go to get their citizenship, they no longer have access to these services, even if they need them. But a lot of these women, these were brand new people too. Like mm-hmm. we were talking to people yeah. who had been here like a year, 6 months maybe. Oh, wow. So like, so still really, really, really fresh, really new. Not obviously that is not enough time to have established yourself income based in a brand new country mm-hmm. when you don't speak English yet, or like when you're learning and like you are working mostly low income labor intensive jobs. So they had these like food assistance benefits and they didn't know how to use them. Like no one had really taught them how to do it. No one had really taught them how to navigate the system. Mm-hmm. No one had taught them how to, like, they had gotten signed up on like their behalf basically, but no one had really explained like how this like food assistance benefit system works. Like yeah. when you need to reapply, like what sort of papers you need, how to fill out forms, like the fact that it's entirely online. And we're talking about a population that like lived in refugee camps for upwards of 20 years, some of them, not all of them, but yeah, some of them definitely had that experience. Yeah. And going into this very online thing when they don't have computers in their houses mm-hmm. or anything like that, or like not understanding like what all of these random, very official pieces of paper mm-hmm. from different social services thing yeah. they're coming from, or that they need them. Or, like, not understanding, like, what you need 3, 4, 5 pay stubs for to, like, prove income. So, like, there's just like, a lot of things where, like, people had benefits, but they didn't know how to access them. Or, like, they weren't getting the right amount because they weren't stating their income correctly. Or, like, they hadn't renewed them. And EBT was a big thing because, like, the EBT system is so complicated. Or not EBT, I'm sorry. The WIC system is so complicated. So, I just, like, found this, like, need for... education basically mm-hmm. that was specific to refugees. And what we have out, the informational packets, one, don't come in Swahili mm-hmm. and two, you know, they're not very accessible, they're not well written, they're mostly online. Again, not knowing where to look or having access to those things, having access to a computer on a regular basis doesn't help. So it just came up with like this idea to adapt the information about food assistance benefits and accessing them and using them, and then also tying in like a healthy food and like navigating the American food system and understanding healthy food choices into ESL programming. Mm-hmm. So that was always the thing, and I was like, yeah, that's a great thing. And then that was always the idea, and I was going to work with them, and then Trump got elected. And that honestly put so many things on pause for a while. Like, honestly, I sort of felt stymied for a semester just because like, a lot of the services were just like, yeah, we want this, we want different things, we want groups to do these things, or like we want to say yes to these things, but you know, we don't know if we're going to exist. in 6 months, which is true. And, like, it's still the conversation we have all the time. Mm-hmm. Like, there was a very real fear that refugee services, after Trump was sworn into office, was going to disappear. Because, obviously, he's super anti-immigrant and racist mm-hmm. and all these things. So, yeah, it just sort of got paused for a little bit. And, you know, Trump and the administration didn't deplete social or refugee services completely, but they've, like, experienced basically, like, 80% more budget cuts. Like, the ESL program I worked with went from having a $2 million budget to, like, having, like $600,000 budget. Like, honestly intense. Like, layoffs everywhere, just consolidation of resources, lack of people, which obviously just drives the health disparities and stuff so much worse. So, I mean, it was just definitely lagging, and I took on probably too many projects while I was trying to finish my master's degree, just, like, extra things I was doing. And it took me 3 years. I ended up with a product I was proud of, mm-hmm. so I'm not upset about that. You know, I'm in the PhD program. Other people in our program took 3 years, so a lot of, like, we had one person finish in two, a few finish in 2.5, and the rest were, like, 3, and so it wasn't uncommon. But it was kind of weird, especially because once you get to 3, they're just like, oh, you have to get out of here. Like, we got to get you graduated. And you're just like, yeah, but, like, quit giving me, like, all these other things that aren't my, like, thesis to do.
So did you ever feel, like, discouraged especially when you were talking about that break and gap in time mm-hmm. when it was like, I have what I want to do, but can't really do anything because of the outside forces at be, like.
Yeah. Oh, I mean, it's definitely discouraging. It's also, like, it was also just disheartening after having worked with resettled refugees for so mm-hmm. long. Like, this idea that refugee services and any sort of help in that way, including, like, access to any benefits that they might need, would, like, disappear. Like, that potential threat was really disheartening mm-hmm. And really scary. And something where it's like, if that happened, I don't know what would happen to mm-hmm. a lot of those people.
So how did you get past that? Because I know, especially as mm-hmm. a master's or PhD student, we all reach these, like, kind of pause where we're like,
yeah.
we don't really know what we can do. And it's not necessarily because of us, but it might mm-hmm. be because of something else or whatever other yeah. situation. So what did you do to kind of get over that hump?
Yeah.
Like, how did you kind of ensure that you were still progressing? Like, what strategies or tools did you use?
Honestly, I think for a little bit there, I wasn't progressing because I was just like, oh, so we're just, like, waiting. Okay, like, I'm just gonna wait. We're gonna see what's happening. After that, I just started, I was, like, thinking of backup plans, like, oh, what else could I do, or what else could I write, or what else could I study? Because, I mean, it wasn't that I couldn't necessarily study resettled refugee populations mm-hmm. or do any research with anybody, but it might have been like, oh, this ESL program I want to work with might not exist, so I might have to think of something else. So it was, like, sort of, like, coming up with, like, potential backup plans, and then also working on some other projects I had going mm-hmm. and doing that and not letting myself just sit there, which was a good thing, like, finding other things to do. I think that threat, though, made us think about getting creative mm-hmm. and sort of forced a lot of people to think a little bit differently about, like, what would we do if we keep losing money? Like, how are we going to keep being successful? And I don't think that's a conversation that was always super successfully handled, or I don't know if those solutions really ever come up with, but I guess as, like, people who were researchers with this group, this population, we worried a lot. But then also, we are at this point doing a lot of different things with the communities that weren't involving directly refugee services. So we had started doing things with the youth, and they were really fun. Like, they were a lot of fun. We did, like, a YouTube, like, educational YouTube video program where the kids actually did it themselves. And it's, like, simple things that to us seem very simple, like, how to clean your apartment. Mm-hmm. But, like, in reality, though, like, those aren't things that you just know automatically when you're, because every refugee camp is different. Mm-hmm. Every refugee camp is different. So you do have definitely people who are in camps or in host country stuff who might have that apartment thing or had come from very urban areas. But in, like, this case, we had a lot of people that didn't come from super urban areas. We had a lot of people that were farmers and had lived very successfully as farmers and had no reason to live in a super urban center. And there were definitely people that had lived in an urban center. But, like, refugee camps in Africa are notoriously underfunded. We could unpack that, but, you know, maybe a different time and place that conversation. But it was one of those things where it's just like, if you've never, if, like, do you just use bleach? Like, what is this all-purpose mm-hmm. cleaner? Why is it different than this thing called Windex? Like, mm-hmm. all these different things. We have so many options.
No, we're it's just like, so what do you
use?
To.
Like, do I yeah. use these Lysol antibacterial wipes? Like, do mm-hmm. I use this? Like, why is there bathroom cleaner that's different than all-purpose cleaner? What did they even give them in the first place? Like, yeah. like what cleaning products do they even have? And so it was just like little things like that that I think we really take for granted. That we think so simple, but it's like really like if you were moving to an entirely different situation, like mm-hmm. would you naturally know any of these things? And so it was just like simple things like the kids themselves said they wanted to make videos about. So they wanted to make videos about learning to clean an apartment properly, like different things, especially like things in the kitchen, like the dishwasher, like an automatic mm-hmm. dishwasher, things like that. They wanted to make videos about bullying. They wanted to make videos about music. They wanted it was just listening to like what they wanted to do and putting together these projects. So we started doing a lot of just more community-based things, which I guess things definitely could have evolved into a master's thesis project. But then, you know, like refugee services got cut, not eliminated. So like things were different, but I was still able to do the ESL stuff. It just had gotten pushed back a little bit, and then I got bogged down with stuff that wasn't my thesis again. And so it just took a little bit longer than I planned, but
no, but I love that how it was, yeah, it was this issue and hurdle that you had, but just keep moving forward yeah. and just finding other ways.
Yeah.
And I remember during that period, I had an opportunity to kind of come out with you with one of your
yeah.
activities. And so I still remember, cause I remember how frustrated I was. You had taken a group of women to, the grocery store to yeah. use their WIC benefits mm-hmm. and everything along that lines to kind of figure out what products like worked, which ones they were allowed to have, and mm-hmm. things along that line. So here in the state of Florida, at least at the store that we went to, it was like this tiny W, if I remember.
It was a little
it was
baby
so,
W
yeah, that like
on the tag mm-hmm. at Walmart, and yeah. that meant WIC approved.
Yeah, and I mean, me as someone who understands like Walmart, like the basic layout, because yeah. for the most part, Walmarts have the same like setup
yeah.
and like what each product was, like when the paper said you're allowed like 2 pounds of like fruit and things along that yeah. line. I was like, okay, I know this. But as I was going through, I was like, this is so confusing for me as someone who is familiar with kind of all of these boggled down systems. Mm-hmm. So imagine being someone who just came over to the States and trying to figure this out. I thought it was completely
trying
like
to figure out
crazy.
WIC. It's insane.
Yeah. So I love that you had like other projects where it was just like mm-hmm. the work is still important no yeah. matter what it is, even if something else comes up, just keep moving forward.
Yeah.
No, I love that.
Yeah. It was good. That mm-hmm. was definitely, that'd be, I think, if I had to give advice to about that at this point in it. Like things, you're always going to have stuff thrown at you. Like things are never going to go correctly. And my advisor says all the time in research, like, you think things are going to follow your timeline, they're not going to. Like, it's great that you have a timeline, you should definitely have one, but, like, nothing's ever going to go perfectly. Mm-hmm. Things are definitely going to stop, people aren't going to show up, something's going to happen. It's going to break down along the way somewhere, and you have to be able to think creatively, or you have to be able to just, like, get over it, or just mm-hmm. you have to just keep moving yeah. and doing it and finding another way to get
mm-hmm.
get stuff done.
Get it done.
Figure it out.
Keep it moving forward.
And cool. honestly, yes. being creative and having some of those roadblocks thrown at you open your eyes to so many different things and things that you never thought about before, and maybe even like better ways, honestly, mm-hmm. than like what you're originally thinking.
No, and I yeah. love that. See, code of the week, keep moving forward. That's what it means to be a grad student. Like yes. main strategy. No, love that. So another thing that I wanted to talk to you about, because sure. I know that with your project, you've had to deal with so many different personalities.
Oh, yeah.
And even whether it's from, like, outside organization, from other mm-hmm. students, from professors, things yeah. along that line. So how do you deal with that? How do you approach that situation if it's, like, a personality that you don't agree with, a personality that might be difficult, or a personality that might just be great? Because, I mean, everyone's different.
Yeah, I definitely have had exposure to a variety of personalities and different groups of people. I've definitely not been, in a really good way, not been insulated in the academic world, despite like having been in school for so long, which is probably like just a really great thing about being an applied anthropologist and like getting exposure to like this very non-academic sort of place. But working with different personalities can be difficult, but it can, and it can be really challenging, and it can be tiring, and it can be exhaustive, but it can also be such a great learning opportunity. I don't think, I'm never like perfect with every, like a brand new person or group personality. And I'm like, despite being an anthropologist, like I'm not the best person to go up and talk to strangers. Like I'm definitely now better than I think like the average, especially undergrad, when we tell them they have to go and talk to like new people and strangers.
Yeah. And I'm like, no, you just have to do like
it.
I do.
Yeah, and they get really nervous. And I mean, I get super nervous.
Yeah, I get
to
super nervous.
Like,
I've been doing
still
it
do
for years.
It. I guess I've just like learned to put on like that mask of like not being really nervous.
Ooh, fake it till you make it. I'm
telling you. Yeah, for sure. I guess it's just like, I'm trying to think of like how I do that. But I think part of it's like a period of just like observation and like trying to like just really pay attention to like the area around you, and not with specifically how people interact with you, but how you're seeing these groups of people and these different rounds interact with each other. And other people, I think you can learn so much. Oh my God, my participant observation spiel. I just think you can just learn so much from watching, and people watching is so interesting. But like,
get a
why
degree
am I an
it,
anthropologist?
I'm telling you.
Why?
No,
I
I've been pushing
why.
This since episode one. People watching, it's
so
a way of life, I'm telling you.
But you can learn so much from like watching that. And honestly, like you're never going to be perfect. Like you're going to make somebody mad. It happens. It's going to happen. Or you're going to get offended or get mad when that person had no intention to do that. It's going to happen. So I would say, first of all, like, just don't, like, be afraid of being around different personality types like that. Like, it's going to feel awkward. It's inevitable that it's going to be really weird and nerve-wracking. But, like, after a while, it just stops because you just realize these are people. Hmm. Like, they're human beings. Mm-hmm. Like, you have a different personality, too. And also,
absolutely.
Like, being sort of, like, reflective and knowing that, like, they also probably feel sort of weird because, like, whatever your position is, if you're a student, if you're a professor, if you're a researcher, like, being a researcher, like, imagine how they might be, like, awkward around you. Like, this is not just a one-sided thing. Everyone's like, what is going on? Like, how do I interact with this person? So I guess, like, by and large, it's okay to feel weird. Just talk. Be yourself, try and be respectful, like, and be open, like, just be open to other things and other ways of life, and like, don't be afraid to also ask people questions. I think a lot of ways where you're just like, I've just said, like, how should I address you?
Mm-hmm.
Is okay. Like, ask people if
no,
you
that's
don't
so
know.
True. Yeah,
like,
it never hurts.
It never hurts. Like, most people are not gonna get mad if you're like genuinely just like, I don't know what to do in this situation. So like, if you could advise me, like, I don't want to like mess up. A lot of people are going to be like, well, at least they're giving like an effort to do it, and no, people, most people would be mad. It can be hard, and I mean, there's always gonna be challenging personalities, and I can as talk about that. You're always going to run into people who are difficult, who feel difficult, or who feel aggressive or abrasive in that way. And I mean, it happens. It's not great. Try not to be that person. Try not to be that aggressive,
yes, do
abrasive,
not be that person.
Defensive
yeah.
person. The only thing I can say is like, when it comes to something like that, don't rise to that level, because
mm-hmm.
that's just not, you don't want to, don't match that tone.
No, absolutely.
That's never going to make it better. Just try and stay like calm and centered and like yourself. Like, just like, don't match that super aggressive and abrasive personality. And that's honestly the best way to interact with those people. And there's just gonna be some people who you're gonna hate interacting with, but you're gonna have to. But I guess you just learn over time to do it. And I also think if these are like undergrads, especially listening about this, or anyone who's never really interacted with people, it's an art. I
so
have not
true.
Perfected it. I'm not perfect at all. Like, I'm not great at it.
That's a good way of putting it. It really is. It's like
art.
A craft you have to work
you
on.
You just have to
learn. I still have
over,
to work on
you
that.
You learn over time. You really do. You just learn over time. You're not going to be perfect at it. I can't give you a how-to guide of how to interact perfectly with people from different walks in life and different positions, because there's no how-to guide to do that. There's no way I can, like, give you something to read or tell you something that's going to make you the perfect person to go out and do that right away. You just learn. But you have to be open to new types of people, and you have to just not be afraid to be around different people. But you also get a lot out of it too. You'll learn a lot and you'll get a lot of different perspectives.
Yeah. No, and I love that. And I think especially if you do decide to go to grad school or if you're currently a grad student, like student, one of the things, especially when I came in with my master's, it was, so we have like in our department, like cohort, like people who start with us, and I didn't necessarily like everyone. And I mean, and you're not going to. No. In life, you don't like everyone, but these are still like your future colleagues and people that you will interact with like going forward in the future. And so it's just kind of, how do you like work with that? You kind of just have to do it each day and figure it out as you go. And that's how you really learn it. You just have to do it.
No. Yeah, you just have to do it. Like if that's, if you want to really learn how to navigate a bunch of different personalities, especially in the same room.
Yeah.
The you have to throw yourself into the water.
Yeah, out there. And I know especially with you and your research and kind of your overall grad school experience, you definitely throwing yourself like in that water. I like
in the deep end.
Exactly. But that's not necessarily a bad thing. So no, thank you so much for sharing that with us. No, because I think it's one of those important things that there's not enough conversation on it, and we just need to start the conversation.
It's so weird because like, how do you, like, you can't teach people to talk, to interact with other people. Well, I don't.
Yeah, you just have to do it, and that's the thing. Just do it. Yeah, you might be like, ooh, that was so awkward, but guess what? They probably thought the same thing, and I think that when you said that, I was like, no, that's so true, because I know usually in situations where I'm uncomfortable, that other person probably felt uncomfortable too.
Absolutely. My first time doing research with another group of people, I was so terrified and really, really nervous and really afraid of upsetting people and, like, offending somebody, and, like, I didn't know what to wear, and I was, like, so, like, even I was so worried about everything. My first time presenting at a conference, I was so nervous, and I had done public speaking before, and I actually consider myself like a pretty good public speaker, but I was so nervous because I was like waiting for like these like actual anthropologists to start tearing me down and being like, your research is terrible. I'm like, what are you talking about? Like,
but did that happen? It doesn't happen. No, right? Exactly. See, I feel like you just build it up in your mind worse than it actually is going to happen.
You walk into grad school and you're like, oh my God, I'm going to fail right off the bat.
It's and you're just, not. Trust me, you won't.
You won't. But also, everybody's feeling that way.
Yep.
100%. Everybody is feeling that way. Yeah. No. So, your point about like not liking everybody in grad school is so true. You're not gonna like everyone.
No, and that's okay. It's like okay. You don't have to.
But
like,
you need to be respectful of everybody.
Oh yeah. No. Absolutely.
Like, you need to be open to new people. But it's okay to do that. But find your friends. Find your group. Find your core. We've got one. We found it. It came from our first class. Yeah. It like edited itself and like dwindled down as people left the program and things like that. But
and
like
you graduated and graduated. People got added from different cohorts and things like that. And I mean,
but you find you find your people who help you do that, and you just you learn and you find the people to where like if you had a bad interaction with someone or you like don't know what to do, who you can like rant to.
Yeah, true.
And then you get their perspective, who's I'm just like, this is the great way to do it. This is how you should do it. Or like, you've got this. And so you'll find that group.
Yeah, absolutely. And even those people that you don't like, you'll still learn stuff from them.
Oh, absolutely.
Because isn't, like, I can think of numerous example of people that I'm like, oh, I just really don't want to be in the room with you right now. Yeah. And then they'll say something brilliant, and I'll just begrudgingly like jot it down as a note. And I'm like, that was actually really great. I need to like write this down so I remember.
Yeah, absolutely.
So no, I love that.
I've got like a really challenging personality in one of my classes right now. And I'm not, I mean, it's not great, but.
No, but I feel like probably sometime you'll like learn. But or even that, you like learn just how to deal with personalities better. It's always like a life lesson. So no, thank you so much for sharing with that. So for our last segment of the show, I like to keep it super cash because that's just
the
mood.
Keeping it cash.
So all the cash rules. That was for my Gen Zers. Like all the waves side to side. But yeah, keeping it cash for my Gen Z listeners or just casual. Like, so how was your week? What'd you do? What was something new and interesting that happened?
Got a tattoo. Don't tell my dad. He might be mad, but he'll get over it. It'll be fine. It's a dedication to our home state, so he can't get that mad.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Yeah.
Well, cool. So, what else happened?
What else happened? This was, I guess, a pretty typical week for me. I've got a weird schedule this semester. Mm-hmm. So, like, I'm not in classes every day. I'm in classes once a week because all of my classes are on the same day.
Smart. So smart.
Which is not my plan. That was not smart. It was not my plan. I sit in the same room for 6 hours straight. Not fun. They're supposed to be on two different days according to my schedule, but that one class on Thursday was actually on Wednesday, and the computer was wrong, like the system was wrong. So no one went to class number one. None of the grad students went to the first class because we were told it was on a different day. So, but now all my classes are on the same day.
But keep moving forward.
Yeah, so, I mean, this is a pretty typical week for me. I feel like I have sort of a strange, I don't know if it's strange, honestly, with the PhD. So, like, a lot of people work when they have their when they're getting their PhD. It's not uncommon at all. I mean, some people just teach, some people TA and teach, some people just TA. Like, some people have regular jobs because they don't have funding. It's just different for everybody, which is also a great thing about grad school. You're going to have people in so many different situations. Different employment statuses, all of these different things. But I work technically three jobs. I guess technically three jobs.
How do you manage that?
I'm like a TA or like a graduate assistant, but like for three different people.
Okay.
So sometimes like my advisor for like so much, and then like my hospital one, they overlap sometimes because like my hospital person who's also getting his PhD at the same time, he already has an MD. He's like, that's, talk about an intimidating person to talk to a lot of times. But he's like my boss. But they also co-teach a class together. So like my work with them meshes sometimes, but it also doesn't always mesh all the time. So it just depends. But then I also work in our school's library, working in their oral history department up here, doing that. So I work for the library on 2 days a week. I have class 1 day a week, like all day. I sometimes TA for one class Mondays and Wednesdays, but it changes. Like, I TA for the class all the time, but I don't physically have to be there all the time. I don't have anything to do on Thursdays really, and then like I TA for another class, on a hospital based class, on Friday. So that's like my typical like week, and this was a pretty typical week for me. Did I do anything spectacular? Oh, I have an online class.
Oh, okay. That's, cool.
So I have three classes, just one's on the internet. And I cannot tell you yet if I recommend that to you at all. I think it depends on the type of person you are.
No, we'll bring you back to see.
Bring it back to talk about
like
online.
Like at the degrees. End of the semester, I'll be like, Emily, online. Recommend, don't recommend,
hardcore,
thoughts.
Yeah, though, if I do this MPH, I'm doing so much of it online because I just don't want to physically go to the public health campus because it's far away from the social science part of campus. But I do have an online class, so that worked just different. But this was like a really typical week. Like, I just, you know, went to work. This wasn't a hurricane week, so there was no hurricane
was
for us
nice.
To worry about.
Yeah. So campus was actually open.
Yeah, campus was open. Was nice. So I went to work my 2 days. I just did TA stuff, different things when I wasn't working. I did my classes, I read, I did like the homework that was due. I didn't have anything due for my online class this week, so that was a nice break because usually, you know, I have like, I'm in three classes that have like weekly things due basically, which is not fun, but I did, you don't know these things until you get the syllabus.
Yeah, true.
This is not something you're made aware of. And they're not necessarily all hard every week, like they're not difficult. Some of it, it's busy work. Some of it's not. Some of it's actually building to a larger project, which is good. But I still usually have something due in each class every week. And then Thursday, I didn't do anything. I had a sick dog. The dog was sick on Thursday, sort of. He wasn't really sick. He just ate something strange. So I sort of just hung out at my house to like make sure he wasn't ill.
He was okay.
He's fine.
Yeah.
He's
His
fine.
Name is Fender. He's adorable.
Listeners,
he's the cutest thing ever.
He's really cute.
I'll post pictures.
He's
adorable. He's
my old man. He's 10, probably.
He was a rescue dog.
So like we don't know how old he is, but he's probably 10.
Yeah, no, he's great. He's the cutest thing ever.
I left him on my bed when he was on my bed last time I saw him. But yeah, so I sort of stayed home with him, and I just did work. Like and a lot of my hospital work is remote. Like I do a lot on my computer, and so I'm not at the hospital that often. With this hospital class like currently going on, it's like a special undergrad class, and if you ever want to talk about working in a hospital, like a medical setting ever, we can do that for sure. So sometimes I am going to be there more now. It's so hit or miss. Advised some undergrads on different things. I'm helping undergrad, part of my stuff with the hospital is helping undergraduates in the honors program with their honors thesis. So met with some who are just starting their thesis, met with some who are writing their thesis currently, just on different things, some on data analysis, some on like structuring an essay, some on them on how to write a proposal. different things like that. So pretty typical, honestly, a pretty typical week for me. It wasn't super, super busy, but it definitely wasn't a laid back week. Okay. So yeah.
So typical week. It was just cash.
Yeah, honestly, it was normal. And I think I have just a strange, I don't even say like I have a strange grad school schedule, but again, grad school is so different for each individual. And you have so many people from different walks of life that it's hard to say like what is typical grad school. Because that like thing in your mind, that like picture perfect movie thing of just going to class and working maybe as a TA is not everybody's experience. And it's not the average experience. Everybody is so different.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I agree. Because, I mean, I spoke a little bit, like, on the episode last week about what I did this week. But you're so right. My schedule has been so crazy. One of the things that I didn't mention is that I finally have an office in the department, which...
Hallelujah.
Yes, I'm so excited for it. I'm going to decorate it. I have a vision in my mind. I hope my new roomie doesn't mind. It'll be great. He'll love it. So...
Hit up Home Goods so hard.
Yes, all of the wax warmers. Wait, can I have a wax warmer? I should ask that just to make sure.
I have never read a rule saying we couldn't have.
Yeah, a wax I know warmer. We can't have open flame, but it's gonna be cute. I'll post pictures of that too. I'll just like spam everyone with it. But one of the things I realized in regards to my schedule is, so in my master's program, I worked full time.
Yeah.
So I had an office on campus, and so I would literally go to work, then class, then back to work. Then either I would stay after and I would do homework or work on anything else I needed to do, whatever. Mm-hmm. But this year, because I no longer work full-time for, like, the university, I'm just, like, on campus even with my fellowship, I realized I've been in the department a lot more than I have over the past 3 years, like, combined these, like, I guess first 3 weeks more than, like, 3 years in total.
Yeah.
So when I was thinking about it, I was like, I need a... office here.
I need a space.
I need a space just so I can like figure things out, especially when it comes to that schedule, because I'm there literally every day, whether it's for classes, meetings, like anything along that line. So yeah, you're right. There's nothing that's typical when it comes to scheduling.
There's
so,
nothing
typical. No, it's every day is something new. So
yeah.
No, but thank you so much for sharing.
Of course. It's good that you have a space now. You
need I'm so excited.
I don't really like my space, but I do have it.
No, I'm going to decorate hers, too. It's going to be great. I'm going
to get myself to use my space more.
Yes.
I'm going to do it. I'm going to be more organized this semester.
Yes, I believe in you. So, in terms of anything else we didn't talk about, think that any last strategies, tools, words of wisdom?
Any apps you use? I don't use any apps. I'm using Duolingo right now because we have a foreign language requirement and my Spanish is so rusty. Using that app to better up on my Spanish. I did not forget as much as I thought I did. So
very nice. That's a very benefit. Nice. Okay.
Toolkit. What's my toolkit? Find something that de-stresses you. Whatever that is, it's different for every person. I like true crime podcasts and walking my dog. Or just chilling with my dog and old episodes of Buffy the Vampire Slayer.
Ooh. Isn't that on Netflix now?
It's on Hulu.
Oh, Hulu. That's where I saw it posted. Okay, I know it was some streaming service.
So
okay,
very whatever nice. It is that de-stresses you, I also like coloring.
Yes.
Yes, I do. I enjoy it. I get those like
all about
adult coloring books that are like complicated and like, oh, draw this like Monet painting because it's fancy. So, but just find little things that distress you. What else can I tell you about surviving grad school and getting through it? Try to be organized. I'm not the most organized individual. I wish I was more organized. I'm more organized than I used to be. I have a planner. I recorded everything from my syllabus and things that I know are coming up in it. Do I forget to reference it at times? Absolutely. Do I hope that will get better as the thing goes on? Yes.
Second that. I second that.
I'm trying it. I have prepared. I'm really going to try and make myself use it. I don't miss assignments, so that hasn't happened. But I am such a procrastinator. And I know that about myself, and I always have been. I work better under pressure, but I don't want to be that person. Like, I don't want to do that, and I'm not trying to do that. So I'm trying really hard to be more organized and more ahead of the game and using my free time when I can. But I also when I have, like, my Thursdays, like, if I can get away with, like, that being my, like, my one, like, my self-care day where, like, I get the stuff that's not grad school related done with my life, whatever that is, I'm going to try and do that. I think it's okay to have that day.
No, I agree. And just to have that moment where you can just plan things out.
And it's a benefit being in, like, my first year because, like, we're not doing quals. Like, we're not in the thick of it. Like, I'm not writing my proposal for my PhD yet. I don't know what exactly I'm going to do. So it's a good time, but I think I need a day to, like, get everything else that's not grad school research part of my life organized. And that's not always a perfect Thursday. Like, I obviously do other work on Thursdays, but, like, if there's something I really need to get done, I'm going to plan it for Thursdays because that's, like that's my, like, Emily day.
No, I love it. Have a whatever your name is day.
Yeah, have a day. Like, you need something to get. Your life is not just grad school
when you're in it. And it can't be.
There's so many other things. And it needs to be other things because you will just get so burnt out and you'll want to end it before it's done. And you don't want to be that. You don't want to do that because grad school can be really rewarding. And it is really rewarding. But you need that day. So like, I think I'm trying to have a day. I'm going to be more organized this semester. I have a calendar. I wrote on it. It's hanging up on my wall. It does not exist still in the plastic. I have a planner. It's got flowers on it.
See, exactly. Claim it. Pretty. Put it out. Claim it in the universe.
I'm putting it. Yeah, putting it out into the universe. Yes. Yeah.
This is what will
happen. So my toolkit is like now my organizer. Like my organizer. Why I don't use a digital calendar, I don't know. My dog, that's great. I don't recommend that everybody gets a dog, but, like, pets are wonderful. Cats are much more low maintenance, but dogs are great, too. Yeah.
Or my, like, tool and strategy, find a friend with a dog.
Have a roommate that's pet. It's not your primary responsibility, but you reap the benefits of having an animal in the house.
And I fully own up to that. I tell all my friends, because I know personally, for me, I can't have a pet at all, but I love being around dogs. I love playing with Fender. I love getting all the good parts without the actual responsibility, so it works.
He's a low maintenance dog. No, he really is. Like,
he's super chill.
We go outside, we walk, he gets food, he naps a lot.
I feed him way too many treats.
He gets treats. He plays with his squeaky toy. He's getting a bath today.
Destroys his
the day of this recording, the dog is getting a bath. Probably because it's also early in the semester, so I don't have that much stuff to do quite yet, so it's not super bogged down. Have a day. Give yourself a day and get stuff that you like. Browse Amazon and not buy anything. I do that all the time. It's great. I put so many things in my cart and then just saved it for later or deleted it. Be like, I'm not ever to actually buy this.
Don't accidentally click that.
Don't accidentally buy.
Do that. Don't worry. We'll have an episode on budgeting.
Never set up a one budget. Oh, budgeting is a one-click thing.
Yeah, no. We'll talk all about budgeting. And, I mean, you kind of have to have a budget in grad school.
You have to have a budget. That hospital job that I have, I'm so lucky, pays me really well. Mm-hmm. For the amount of hours that I'm supposed to put into it, it's really great paycheck. I've been really lucky about that, to not have to have that stress. I'm not flush with cash by any means, but I know I'm gonna have my bills paid.
Yeah, and that level of security is there.
So, and I have some money in it. Like, I have money in a savings account that I don't have to touch, and that's nice. But yeah, budgeting is a great one for you to have later. That's
but yeah, I definitely
we'll get
talk about that.
Financial person in here.
Yeah, financial planning. I know a couple, so I might drag them over.
I don't
know
if I have
a
financial plan. Do I?
No, I have one.
Good for you.
Because I made one for this year. Because I'm you kind of have to.
You have a different sort of approach to it, though. You have a very unique thing with your fellowship and how it's all going, where you don't have a steady job.
So you kind of have to plan it out. Yeah, because I primarily function right now on loans and stipend.
For sure.
Has its complications, but also has its rewards. So, no, we'll definitely kind of break that down.
Yeah, no, I have, my TA with my advisor and in the library are, steady paychecks that pay everything. And then my hospital, that side hustle that I have.
Yeah. And I'm telling you, side hustles are so important.
It's really nice. It's a really good one, and it's so interesting. And it's such interesting work to be in the hospital in such a weird, different sort of way. In, but not really. But, still having access to that environment has been super, super interesting. But that's great. That's been a really great thing to ease the financial stress of
grad school. Definitely.
Yeah.
Well, thank you so much.
You're welcome.
For being on. No, this has been so great. And I mean, So many gems. So I hope everyone listening was taking notes. If not, don't worry. I'm going to do the same thing I did for last episode and kind of have those major talking points in the description. There we go. You can find us on Instagram and Facebook at Grad School Whisper, as well as on Twitter at Grad Whisper. And you can also feel free to reach out to us on our email at gradschoolwhisper.com. So send in any questions, comments, stories, you know the drill, anything that you want to. So until next time, let's keep moving forward.